CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Craig Simons. Nimitz at War, Command Leadership from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Ernest King, Comench, who is always present, 16 times they meet. King's messages to Nimitz and Nimitz's messages to King, the professor, is quoted throughout the book. Now they're debating in person and also by wire about what is to be done about the Japanese homelands who will not surrender. The opinion I take it, Professor, from Nimitz and King's point of view is blockade will force them to the peace table.
I think that's true. I think naval officers at almost every level did not believe an invasion of the home islands was worth the risk. Here we are back to calculated risk. It would cost so much. And we've all heard the line, oh, it would cost 100,000 American killed. Very likely, perhaps more. Fewer consider the fact that it would have cost possibly millions of Japanese to die, because Japanese culture was such that surrender was so obnoxious that no Japanese soldier, no Japanese participant in the war at any level could honorably surrender himself. Therefore, you must fight to the death. So if everyone in Japan fights to the death, what are the consequences of that? There was literally talk within the combined staff in Japan of the honorable death of 100 million. Now, the prospect of that was so horrifying that both King and especially Nimitz believed that avoiding an invasion by depending on a strict naval blockade, executed mostly by submarines, by the way, as well as bombing from the air, would create a circumstance where the Japanese would have to accept the Potsdam Agreement, and that is to say, accept an end of the war on terms that the United States would dictate to them. No. That did happen. But of course, we know there was also an outside influence that we may talk about subsequent. But in general, the Navy wanted to blockade and bomb. The Army, more interested in conducting an assault. George Marshall, the chief of staff of the Army, certainly Douglas MacArthur, who was designated as the man who would command that invasion, both believed an invasion would be necessary and were well advanced in their planning to execute it.
Marshall and MacArthur getting ready for Operation Downfall. It's all going to be pushed aside for what Nimitz learns in March of 45 was a special weapon. What did he know, Professor?
He knew that there was a special project that was developing a special weapon. He was informed he had I think it was an army major, flew out to his headquarters at Guam to sit down with him, just the two of them, and he had a briefcase handcuffed to his wrist, and he briefed him on what this was. But of course, it hadn't yet been detonated. The test at Alamogordo hadn't taken place. The scientists were pretty sure it was going to work. But he notified Nimitz because it was important to make sure that the prospective targets were not interfered with by pre-planned bombing raids or submarine attacks or anything else. So he did know about it. But that doesn't mean he understood at every level exactly what the impact would be. He knew the day of, the time of, and that there was a thing, but that's about it.
The bombs are dropped. August 14th, U.S. time. The war is over. So we need to speak of Nimitz after the war. Right away, they wanted him for CNO. Who was against it?
Well, he had always, I think from the time he was a middle grade officer. Every officer perceives that the top of the pyramid, the job you want, is chief of naval operations. That's the highest job there is in the Navy. And certainly once he became commander in chief Pacific Fleet, it's only logical that when King stepped aside, that Nimitz was the logical person to succeed him. But because of his relation, particularly with Jack Towers and the aviation community and others who supported the aviation community, he was perceived as a bit stodgy. They weren't sure Nimitz was the guy they wanted. James Forrestal, the new Secretary of Defense in the reunification system, was skeptical of Nimitz. But Nimitz had friends, too. And some of those friends went to bat for him and convinced Forrestal that Nimitz was the only possible man. And if you didn't appoint Nimitz, people would wonder why. So Nimitz did get appointed chief of naval operations, but interestingly enough, not for a 4-year term, but only a 2-year term. And Nimitz accepted that. I'll do 2 years, then I'll step aside. And he did.
King has 5 stars. Leahy, William Leahy, the president's chief of staff, FDR's chief of staff, has 5 stars. Nimitz has 5 stars. These Congress created 4 of these possibilities, and the 4th one was left unfinished by the end of the war. The obvious example is Spruance deserves 5 stars, but the decision is made to give it to Halsey. What I like about Spruance is that he remains the quiet man, and he wants the U.S. Naval War College. That's wonderful. It speaks very well of him, Professor.
I certainly think it does. Spruance Auditorium, Spruance Hall at the Naval War College, named in his honor. Very appropriate honor, I think. Spruance was almost a professorial type. I'm assuming that's a good thing here. And I think the fact that he said, no, I don't want to be SINCPAC, which would have been the logical place for him to go. Instead, Jack Towers gets to be SINCPAC. And Spruance specifically asks to be made president of the Naval War College so that he can apply the lessons he learned in the Pacific War to the curriculum of the middle grade and senior officers who are the students of the Naval War College so that they are better prepared to fight the next war whenever and wherever it is. It speaks extremely well of Spruance that he wanted to do that.
Nimitz does not write a memoir, but he does contribute to a book, Sea Power, 1961. He dies in 1966, which becomes part of the education of all cadets, as I understand it. And the professor met the man when he first arrived at U.S. Naval Academy, who co-authored or who worked with Nimitz on that. Do I say that correctly, Professor? We have 30 seconds.
Mostly. I'm going to correct you, however. We don't have cadets at the U.S. Naval Academy.
Midshipmen.
We have midshipmen. Cadets at that other school up on the Hudson River. But yes, it is true that when I first became a professor at the Naval Academy in the mid-1970s, I actually shared an office suite with Ned Potter, E.B. Potter, who, with Chester Nimitz, was the co-editor. It was actually written by several members of the faculty, but edited and re-scripted entirely by both Ned Potter and by Chester Nimitz, who took that assignment very seriously. And that book, now sadly out of print, the long version of Sea Power, which talked about naval history from triremes to today, was the book we used to teach the next generation of midshipmen at Annapolis.
Nimitz at War, Command Leadership from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Craig Simons is the author. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.